Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
You have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
The snap. The kick. It's been blocked again. Oh, my. It's been blocked again.
He's going to heave one deep down the field. It's going to be to the goal line. It's going to be gone. It's a touchdown. And the Gators have won the game. Tyreek Cleveland. Oh, my. I can't believe what I just saw.
Dropping back the throw. Pops and fires the ball. Over the middle.
Have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
Boys and girls, ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of Stadium and Gale. It's your boy Corey.
It's Dan.
And Della Torre.
Same corner, same time, no 2-5 this week. You got some family shenanigans to take care of and whatnot, but the guys are back, the original crew. What's up with it? How y'all feeling?
It's good to see you guys again. Good to see you guys. Fun weekend here in Tampa. Nick, I know you were up and back Gainesville all weekend, but my first time ever going to March Madness. So obviously not the result we wanted. I mean, we'll talk a little bit more about that, but otherwise a great time here in Tampa.
Hollywood, bro. You got a lot of photo ops, my boy.
Yeah, it was fun. Ran into I didn't run into him. I sought him out because I saw him in front. John Summerall, got to chat with him for a bit. He's excited about coming on to Stadium and Gale here after spring practice. So we chatted, chopped it up a little bit about that.
Pretty nice.
Saw Scott Strickland. He had the chance to talk to him. He's also coming back on the show in the not too distant future at the Florida Victorious tailgate. So thanks to Nick and the team over there for bending the rules a few times about how many people are allowed to go in. And I appreciate him for doing that. But met a lot of Stadium and Gale listeners, gave out a bunch of free koozies to people that were out there and supporting the Gators. But a great time out there.
I'd never been to AMSO Tampa.
It's huge.
I'm used to the one on Himarashi Street down in Fort Lauderdale. So when Bree was like, oh, yeah, we're doing an event at American Social, I was like, isn't that kind of small? The place just keeps going in Tampa.
It just goes on forever. You think it's over, and then all of a sudden there's another room. And then you're like, oh, it must be over after this. And then there's a giant room.
Yeah.
I mean, it could probably hold 1,500 people if it wanted.
We had our first event Friday, and the guy was like, yeah, he turned the corner. He's like, that's all yours too. I haven't uncovered that. We're like, we'll uncover the couches if you need them. I was like, what do you mean? I think we have like 400 people coming. We just got room for 1,000 here. But that's a beautiful spot right there on the water. You can bring can you pull a boat in, park a boat and go eat?
Theoretically, those are all private docks. So the city has docks. You can rent them for the day. You can't just do like a lunch or a dinner type of deal. I think it's $10 a foot per day to park.
I'll tell you what, Corey, one of the best parts of boating is just pulling your boat up to a dock. You've been out all day. You're drinking. Like, hey, let's go get some food.
Get I've off been the there, dock, done
that, man. Yeah. Get back on.
Real vibe.
There's a lot more of that in Fort Lauderdale and in West Palm than there is in Tampa. There's really only maybe two places in Tampa that you can do that. There's a couple places south.
It's hard to hear that.
Over in St. Pete, there's a few more, but yeah, they just never built it out to do a lot of real boating, you know, drop off lunch boating type of deal. That's one of the cool parts about the Intercoastal down there in South Florida is the sheer number of restaurants that you have. Oh, this place is busy. Like, we'll go to Boat Campers. Rest in peace to Boat Campers. I think they're closed, right? You go down to the next one. You just keep going down.
Yeah, man. My heyday and my prime, man, we used to take my boy Jeremy Colucci. We used to take his boat out to Peanut Island. First start off at a breakfast spot, you know, pull up on Rum Bar, get us some early morning eggs, waffles, some shots, head to Peanut Island, have a day. And then that evening, man, you at like who knows what restaurant, but you pull right on up, catch some vibes, finish it out. And if you pull up and they got a DJ and some music going, and you pull up on the boat and it's a nice boat.
Yeah.
It's no telling who comes back on the boat.
That's right.
That's all I'll say.
Slight correction, Dan. I think the Boat Campers Fort Lauderdale, the one that you could drive your boat into, closed.
Okay.
But Boat Campers is still open. This looks like
in Pompano or Deerfield, wherever.
It's in Fort Lauderdale ish.
But isn't there one?
There's one in the airport, and then there's one up in Pompano. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Boat Campers is
in Pompano.
Yeah. What are the last times I was down in South Florida?
It's south of Pompano. No, it's not Pompano. It's even south of Lauderdale by the sea. So it's
Well, anyway, enough about Boat Campers. No, it was great. A lot of fans. There's a guy named David yesterday that that sought me out to catch up. So it's great seeing him. Steve, Brian, a bunch of. I try to do a better job of remembering names, but I appreciate anybody that comes up and tells us that they listen to the pod or listen to the pod or follows on Twitter. It's still kind of surreal. So we appreciate all the listeners that are out there.
I ran into somebody at a baseball game last Tuesday who said, "Oh, I just met Dan during football season for the first time." I was like, where'd you see him? He's like, "Oh, I saw him out." I was like, "You don't listen to the show."
Yeah. It wasn't a meeting.
You don't listen to the show.
Be a Patreon member, you just get invites to the bathroom, man, at random games.
Not a real ball knower, Dan.
Yeah. I didn't get into much this weekend, man. Some yard work, some pressure cleaning, you know, out back. One thing about yard work, bro, like I've been lifting again, right, with my son, lifting weights. So that was a whole, you know, reacclimation period, body feeling some muscles that I never felt before. I thought I was good to go with, like, you know, new muscles waking up until you go do some just yard work, bro. It's muscles in your fingers and hands and forearms that you didn't know exist, my brother.
I forgot. I was in like my best shape doing yard work. You like the insides of your fingers. You're like, what is that?
yeah.
I completely forgot on Saturday morning. So to my parents, I apologize. I got after a little bit Friday during the game.
He's back.
Had a couple beers. With the boys, and then Sarah and her parents came. Needless to say, it's somewhere between one and seven or eight beers. And I forgot. Saturday morning, I had to help Sarah clean out a bunch of insulation out of her attic and then lay some new insulation with her dad, and then a buddy of mine came over. Brother, I was not feeling my best.
I'm surprised you did that.
I sweated it all out real quick, but
they didn't offer that on TaskRabbit or nothing like that.
I'm not going to say anything. I appreciate her parents for coming down. It's great spending time with them. There's certain things that I feel like you could pay somebody to do that might even do a better job than I did.
I'm surprised you were doing this. Is definitely love. You're in love, brother.
I tell you what, they don't make them like me much anymore.
Sarah was telling me about it Sunday, and I was like, yeah, I wouldn't do that. She's like, you don't need any skills to do it. You just have to pull it. I was like, yeah, that's fine. I just have to pull my debit card out.
It's no short of 110 degrees at 10 a.m.
Oh. No. In the attic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Heat rises. Dan is just sweating out last night's IPA.
For sure.
No IPA.
Asbestos flying through the air. Beers.
As a guy that was a termite technician in pest control and used to have to do like treat attics, you cannot go up there hungover, man. It's hazardous. You could die up there, man. It's hot.
Yeah. I survived, thankfully. But
he's here.
But yeah, next time I'll pay next time. Hopefully there's not a next time. You know what I mean? Oh, man. All right. Well, let's get on the show. Lots to talk about. We got Marcus Davis, outside wide receivers coach Marcus Davis, from the 561. He'll be joining us in about 30 minutes. And then after that, we've got former Gators offensive lineman Antonio Riles joining the show as well. So, Corey, let's get a quick ad read. I'll do one, and then we'll get on with the program.
Stadium McGill is powered by the great folks at Brunt Insurance and Financial Services. Anything you need insured from the Panhandle to the Keys, my man Greg is the best of the best, and I guarantee you he can save you some money. Visit him at bruntinsurance.com or give him a call at 954-589-2204, and that's home coverage, auto coverage, motorcycles, RVs, dirt bikes, anything with wheels, and also your life. 954-589-2204 or bruntinsurance.com.
Greg, yeah, what do, baby?
Completely forgot, Nick. I'm working with his team right now for myself for a big purchase, and his team is awesome. A ton of different options. They respond back quickly, so shout out to the folks over at Brent Insurance. And then one time for our friends over at the Dykus Burke and Lewis Law Group. You can visit them at dykusburkelaw.com. These guys used to work for the insurance companies, and now they work for you to protect you against the pesky insurance companies that are out there and want to deny, deny, deny. So go visit them at dykusburkelaw.com. So any issues that you have with property insurance claims, pipe damage, water damage, wind damage, hail, sinkholes, hurricanes, whatever it might be, the Dykus Burke and Lewis Law Group, 855-652-1377. All right, guys, unfortunate loss yesterday to Iowa, but the Gators did beat Prairie View A&M on Friday night, a late game where they won 114-55. At one point, the game was 15-15, and then the Gators went on what I believe was a 45-6 run to end the first half, and it's a game that you had Ollie come in, Olivier Rio, at the end of the game. He ends up with one basket, one rebound, and one assist. Gators were shooting lights out. Team overall just looked great, especially after a tough loss to Vanderbilt in the SEC tournament. The Gators came out, looked great shooting the ball. Yesterday against Iowa, a bit of a different story. Gators go on a series of droughts throughout the game. And in Iowa, Clemson had played right before Prairie View and Florida had played. And that was a game that just didn't look anywhere close to the game of basketball that you and I are used to watching in this day and age. So I thought the Gators had a good chance against Iowa. They're a slow, kind of methodical team, but they're going to, you know, usually shoot pretty low in the shot clock. But other than that, it looks like the Gators were going to, I don't want to say dominate them. It's going to be a tough matchup, but at any point in the game, the Gators really could never sustain a lead. They could never really do much other than go down, catch back up, up until really the fourth quarter. Late in the second half, the Gators took a lead with just a couple minutes left, or with about a minute left in the game. They have a lead. Unfortunately, they miss a couple of shots, turn the ball over. Iowa makes an open three. With just 4.5 seconds left in the game, Gators inbound the ball. Xavier Lee takes it down, throws it under the basket. Gators not able to get a shot off as they go down, and Iowa celebrates in a 73-72 loss for the Gators, ending their season. What'd you guys think of the game?
Weird. Just a weird game. Xavier Lee came out shooting well. I think he had like 7 or 10, something like that, early.
Yeah.
Tommy Houck didn't get into a rhythm. Ruben Chinyelu got into foul trouble. He ends the night with no points, one rebounds. He was in foul trouble the whole game.
Yep.
Florida never got into a rhythm. And I saw somebody, I can't find the tweet now, but somebody said, it almost makes sense. As good as this team was, it just didn't feel like there was a month stretch where they dominated the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
But, it just didn't feel like this was a team that was going to go the whole way. They're super talented. that last play, the play that Iowa got the three-pointer on, it's interesting because I remember when Todd was hired, we talked about analytics. And remember he said, if we're up two with – 10 seconds or less, we're going to foul. analytically, you want to foul. Doesn't matter who's on the line. You'd like it to be someone, you know, you'd like it to be one of their worst free throw shooters. It doesn't matter. But even if it's their best free throw shooter, you foul early in the clock. They take two free throws. Worst case scenario, you have a tie game with the ball. They tried to do that there, and I think Boogie goes under the screen. I don't know that he needs to go under it.
Well, if you're going to foul then, right? Or why are you going under the screen instead of over? And I don't pretend to know, but it seemed like it was either a bad reaction or the I don't want to say he was coached poorly. It could have just been an error in judgment, or you think that you have an opportunity to get the ball or intercept the ball. But at no point should you ever allow somebody to be able to have a completely open lane to run.
Yeah, and then it's tough. I know people are saying, Tommy, it's like, well, he picked the wrong guy. He should have gone to the corner for the three. And, like, that's just human nature is tough to be like, ah, shoot. Let me just completely part the Red Seas and let this guy go and get a layup. He kind of just got stuck in no man's land because of it. I think Xavier probably should have switched off once Boogie went under the screen, probably should have switched, gotten in and taken the foul there, got, you know, taken an angle and got in front of the guy with the ball. But yeah, they were trying to get a foul, put somebody on the line, get two shots, get another shot. But yeah, it was just a game that, like, I think Iowa, it's interesting because I was texting Dan. I was sitting right behind Iowa's bench, and at like 3-4 minutes into the game, their head coach turns around to the assistants and was like, Jesus Christ, we're small. Yeah. Like, compared to Florida. And he was pacing and they seemed stressed out the whole game. But, like, I feel like Iowa just played a really, really good game. They were physical down low. They got Ruben in foul trouble.
They landed
a punch.
Yeah, we'll talk about the punch here in a second. But, I mean, I think rebounds go 27-27 to both teams. And this is
game. Florida had to come back, too. They were down. Yeah. Points in the paint, they were down rebounds, big. They were down early.
Yeah, they were down big. I don't know what it was. They just were off yesterday, and that's going to happen, right? And
I think that's been the recipe is just if you could get those bigs in any type of foul trouble and kill that starting lineup, limited minutes amongst that crew, the guard play hasn't been strong enough for us to survive our bigs not playing well, and they just kind of resurfaced again.
Yeah, and we did have the other center out for this game. He was injured at the end of the Prairie View game. You know, but for Ruben to end, you know, such a great season with 0 points, just one rebound in the game was unfortunate. And it's sad to end. You just don't know what next season looks like. There's an assumption and a presumption that Tommy Hawk's going to go to the NBA. You know, where does that lead Alex Condon, who had a good game overall? Obviously, the end of the game is something that people are going to continue to watch, but, you know, led the team in points overall, shot pretty well, played well in that game. So does he come back? Does Ruben Chinyelu come back? Xavier Lee is obviously gone. Boogie Fland is likely to come back, I would imagine, as well. But what does this roster look like next year? You're going to want to see more out of Isaiah Brown and CJ Ingram. You know, what do you do in the transfer portal? And is Todd Golden a guy that's going to be wanted by other programs too? So it's just going to be an interesting offseason for the Gators. I think Todd loves Gainesville, but I also think that, you know, if a UNC, you know, job comes open soon or a Kansas job comes open soon, might they try to kick the tires on that and what that might look like? So it's just an interesting time for the Gators looking into next year.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't get the whole job change thing, but I do think, like, if he's here or whatever the future may be, I don't foresee him leaving. I think Florida's fully invested in basketball and has given him, you know, more than what he's asked for. So,
absolutely.
I don't foresee it. I think that's the thing. I think Florida's a big dog in the basketball world. You know, Carolina is more historic and the legacy is old, but these days that they're just not the force they used to be. Them or Duke, I would say since the NIL opened. They're like Bama, right? Like, they were big dogs before NIL opened, but now it's a lot of parity in basketball. And as long as you got money, you can make a run. But yeah. I think he needs to recruit the guard position a little bit better. You know, we've been depending on getting portal guards that didn't pan out like we wanted to this year. They had a nice little run, you know, and they had some success towards the end of the season. But on the season's totality, I don't think those guys lived up to what they NIL and what we thought, you know, getting them out of the portal. So we're going to have to get aggressive in the portal again. but eventually we're gonna have to start recruiting a little bit better in the high school ranks at guard.
Yeah, well, they really like Alex Lloyd.
Yeah,
played sparingly. It'll be interesting to see because you've got him. I think there's a strong chance you get a lot of the front court back. I think Micah will probably even look for a waiver to come back. I think Alex, the feedback he got from the NBA was you need to be a little bit tougher inside, and we need to see you shoot threes. He tried to shoot threes. It wasn't working. They shut it down after a month or two. I think he's going to get the same feedback he got.
Yeah, but he's not going to be able to get that work off. Todd ain't about to let him just start chucking up threes next year, bro.
You can make a lot of money being a senior.
Yeah, no, I get it.
11 center in college. So I think you're going to get a lot of guys back. CJ Ingram's unbelievably athletic, great scorer. Should be a great defender. I think Boogie probably comes back. If you get Alex Lloyd back, you get Urban back, Isaiah Brown. AJ Brown's a great shooter. We didn't see him because he had an injury. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think you get most of the team back, but I think you'll probably be in the portal looking for an elite shooter. You let Boogie just be a point guard, and you go look for – there's, like, a kid from Stanford. I don't know if he's going to do anything. But you need, like, an elite scorer, a guy that – hey – one possession game, that's the guy we're going to. Like ISO, or we're drawing up a play for him.
Tommy's actually got a great take.
I was laughing. we need more guys as kids. They've got more to work for.
Yeah, tell you what. Walt had to pay the bills, yeah. Baby.
You don't need me or Corey in a Florida basketball jersey.
No, yeah, not
Boogie
me.
Boogie said he was told to chase. Yeah, I mean, maybe it's just one of those things. It didn't work out, right? You got caught in a situation where he had a completely – and that guy is the guy Sturts, played all 40 minutes, had 13 points. Tavion Banks, number six, had a kind of out-of-his-mind game in that one. He's not normally that good. It was a tough loss. Iowa shot. 1 for 11 from 3-point in the first half, and then they went 6 of 13 in the second half. So it's just, you know, those things unfortunately happen. Gators again don't shoot well from the three, go 6 of 19, and this is a team that they shot 68.5% or 0.4% from field goal in the second half, and 37.5 from three. They missed a bunch of free throws. They missed five, seven in the game. So, you know, those points matter. 9 lead changes. So,
what would y'all take on the punch?
I mean,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, if you throw any punch, that to me is a punch, whether it hits the face of another player, hits the body. But at no point should you be punching a basketball, especially after a whistle's been blown. So if you have your hand in a punch formation, that to me is a punch, but by definition.
Hmm. It looked to me like he reared back to, like, hit Alex, and then at some point realized, like, oh, I can't do this, and, like, kind of, like, reversed, moved course. But yeah, then the explanation to Todd is like, yes, he threw a punch, but it was a bad one, inaccurate, so just a flagrant one. Like, to me, that's a wild explanation. I would have gotten teed up.
It was way too long of a review too.
Yeah. I want to see, like, we had this take a couple of weeks ago about bringing hockey to basketball. I would like just see him and Alex just shoot a fair one. Like, you can try to get a cheap shot while I'm on the ground wrestling for the ball. Yeah. Okay, square up at midcourt like it's a tip off, and let's figure it out.
That instead of the possession arrow, we're gonna throw hands at midcourt.
It still is. I like
up.
Alex.
It's an old fashioned square up.
Yeah, how you settle things, man. The old world.
But yeah. So again, Marcus is waiting. So we'll wrap this up. Tough loss. Gators have a big offseason ahead. Corey, I agree with you. I don't know why Todd would leave. I think that he's got the resources. I think he's got a lot of support behind him. And, you know, I think that Florida would do whatever they can to keep him. But, you know, those jobs don't come up and come open often, and you just never know what somebody might be looking for. He is the odds on favorite right now for the UNC job at 3-1 odds there. But we'll address that if that is ever something that we have to address. But we never want to dream about an idea of where he might leave or think about that. So with that being said, let's give a quick shout out to our friends over at Game Time Sidekicks in honor of the boys. Tough way to end the season, but I got the cool little Gator Boys Cup here. But it's going to keep your hot drinks hot
until the new national championship, Dan.
That's right. Man. We were talking about it. I was
on the same page.
I was with a buddy of mine the other day. He's like, well, now you guys aren't national champions anymore. I'm like, well, we are for another 3 weeks.
Well, who is?
Yeah, that's right. So as far as I'm concerned, the Gators are still national champions. But it's going to keep your hot drinks hot, your cold drinks cold. Go visit GameTimeSidekicks.com. Use promo code STADIUM15 for 15% off of your order. And with that, we are excited to welcome Florida's new outside wide receivers coach, Marcus Davis, comes to us in Gainesville from 3 years at Auburn, where he was a coach there and formerly a player. And now he is joining John Summerall's staff as the outside wide receivers coach, Marcus Davis. Marcus, how are you, my brother?
I'm doing great. How y'all doing?
Good. You know what, Corey? I completely forgot to mention. He's also from the 5'6"1.
Yeah, I can't believe you left that out, man. That's the most important thing. What's up, Marcus? How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
I can't complain, man. I'm down here in Palm Beach right now. The weather's beautiful.
Let's go. Yeah. I love it. Yes, sir.
All right, Marcus. Talk to us a little bit. You're stepping in your first year at Florida, 3 years at Auburn. What made this job for you the right next step in your career?
And you know what? You know, it's a thrilling honor to be here for sure. You know, being from this state, it's just different. You know, the University of Florida is different. And, you know, I growing up, I always loved the Gators. Obviously, I went to school somewhere else. And so it's just surreal, and it was a great opportunity for me to just be back in my home state. I know, you know, the state well, and I know I love the brand of young man that you get to coach here. So, man, it was a no-brainer for me for sure.
How was you obviously South Florida kid, migrated to Auburn. How was it recruiting in that SEC footprint at Auburn and recruiting the state of Florida? And how do you feel it might be different or easier maybe to keep some of those kids from leaving the state and keep them here?
Yeah, just, you know, being from this state, you know, knowing what these young men made of, you know, knowing what make them go, what make them tick. Like you just said, I was one of them at one point, you know. And so, once you got this logo on, it hit different too, man. Once these kids see that Florida Gator logo, and they know this program about to explode, it make it that much easier to want to be a part of something like this.
What was your – now, you was at Florida State before when you got your start. What was your start like? Who gave you that opportunity?
Yep, so, man, shout out to Coach Kenny Dillingham. You know, he was actually at Auburn. I was working on the off-the-field role, and he took the offensive coordinator job there, and I kind of followed him there. And so that's what really kick-started everything for me. Mad respect for Coach Dillingham for sure.
Okay. Talk to us a little bit about the way you guys have things set up there under Buster Faulkner and John Summerall over there. So you're coaching outside wide receivers, and then you have Trent coaching inside wide receivers. Talk to us a little bit about how that coaching happens during – practice, and are you guys just talk to us a little bit about that setup? I probably have a couple follow-up questions.
Yeah, we collaborate well. You know, I knew Trent, you know, just from in his profession. I always respected him from afar, so it's an honor to be able to work with him too. Bright mind, and so the collaboration been great. You know, we bounce ideas off each other, and you know, the guys feed off of that energy too. They see two good leaders leading them in the right way, and I think it's a perfect fit, to be honest with you.
So with that in mind, are you guys doing different drills, whether you're an outside guy or an inside guy during practice, or is it more going to be in the film study that things are broken out, or is it more you guys just working together more strategically? Talk to us a little bit about kind of how that makeup is.
Yeah,
this is the first time I think Florida's had, at least on paper, an inside and outside wide receiver coach.
Yep. So basically, Trent and I, we collaborate on everything together and, you know, make sure whatever we're doing is best for the receivers in total, you know, because our job is to develop them all, whether it's outside or inside. So we work hand in hand with it all, whether that's drill work or film work, we work hand in hand together.
Are you guys cross training inside and out to possibly get the best three or four receivers on the field, or how does that work?
I think, you know, just as time goes, that's something that naturally happens. You know, right now you're just installing and making sure guys know what they're doing and knowing the offense.
Talk to us a little bit. So you guys had a couple good years there at Auburn. Cam Coleman, Eric Singleton was there, and you are coaching him again now at Florida. But what do you look for when you're recruiting a guy and then developing him? Talk to us a little bit about what sticks out to you on tape.
Yeah, the main thing is, you know, just, you know, speed. You know, how fast is he? How well do he separate? You know, do he got a natural feel for the game? Is he a hands catcher? What are you doing at the top of the route that separates him? You know, and you know, all receivers are different. Some guys separate with speed. Some guys separate with power. You know, and the perfect example of that, you think about a guy like Vernell, he separates more with speed. When you think about Dallas, he'll be a guy that separates more with power. Not saying that they both can't do either or, but you just look for those different traits, and then you see how you kind of fine-tune those skills as far as that goes.
And you probably want a mix of both of those types of players?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
you want a mix of them. And then also one of the harder things is, you know, just finding what those intangibles are. You know, because that's what really separates you in college, because, you know, everybody big, everybody fast. But what are those little things that you're doing that people ain't going to be able to see? How often are you, are you coming up and getting extra film work? Well, how often are you doing it by yourself too? You know, and those things that you do in the dark is what actually really shows, you know, like we all know. So the intangibles is big, man. You know, how well are you leading? Are you just leading because of coach around, or is that who you really are? And those are all of the things that really make a difference in a team and in a room or a position group.
Are you seeing that from VB3? I was telling the guys last week that I feel like he's been more – obviously he was a freshman last year, but he's been more vocal to me.
Yeah, and, you know, I think he just natural. That's just who he is. And it kind of going to, like, those intangibles that I'm talking about, you know, like what a guy really made of, because that's what's going to show up. And he's somebody that just – he don't try to do it. It's just who he is. So it's super organic for him.
How hard is it for you as a coach to sit there and see number six with no pads on in a boot when you would like to, like, I'm sure would like to have him out there?
Well, you know, it's just one of those things where you want to make sure you're doing the best to make sure everything go well with him. So it's one of those things where you think from a different lens more than just trying to see somebody or get them to practice or whatever the case may be.
How do you view this room just talent-wise? Is it one of your better receiver rooms? I know around the country, you know, fans and just media pundits are just saying this is one of the more talented wide receivers rooms in the country. What were your thoughts coming into this room? And as we added pieces throughout the portal and whatnot, what's your thoughts of it now?
Yeah, it's definitely talent, but, you know, it's still a lot of work that you got to put in too. You know, because if you ain't putting in the work and then you ain't dedicated in it, if it ain't a day-by-day thing, it could be wasted as well. So, man, what I say is, to answer your question, it's a talented room for sure. But also what I want the mindset of the room to be is we got to work for everything that we get and go earn it and go prove it, not just today or not because somebody pat you on the back, but go prove it every day. And that's how you approach the film room. That's how you approach the football field. Shoot, that's how you approach the classroom. That's how you do everything that you do. So that's really the mindset that we're trying to create, just so the football part is second nature to us, because all the other stuff is what's going to show as well.
I got to ask you this, man. What's up with my guy, Michael Mays? I was when I found out we offered him, he's still there? He blinked out on my end.
Black screen. I don't know if he's there. There he is. Yeah.
Let me ask you about my guy, Micah Mays. Now, when we first offered him through the portal, you know, I was on Twitter telling a lot of people he's a 5'6" guy. I actually know his father and his uncle as well. they 5'6" guys and we're good athletes. So I was just like, that's good pedigree. This is a guy that's going to come and wait for us and I think contribute if we get him. What's your thoughts on Michael Mazin? Did you have a prior relationship with him or knew him because he was a Palm Beach guy?
Yeah, so I did have a prior relationship. I actually, back when I was at Georgia Southern, I recruited him a little bit. And then he got big time on me, you know, he ended up going to Wake Forest. That's the same thing with Eric Singleton. You know, I was recruiting those guys when I was back at Georgia Southern. But long story short, Michael Mays is somebody that he's made up of the right stuff. He's built the right way. He a willing learner. He want to get better. He'll lead by example guy. And, you know, just when guys are built that way, good things happen for them because they're going to put themselves in positions to continue to grow. You know, and just having a presence like him in the room, it's good for younger guys as well. You know, when you think about DG or Justin or, you know, Marquez, any of these young guys that's in the room, it's good to have a presence like Micah that's, you know, played a bunch of football and a guy that do things the right way.
He's having a good camp, too. A bunch of the other receivers and DBs have told me, like, he's flying under the radar. We can keep it that way. They'll find out. Let them find out in September. I wanted to ask you about Eric Singleton because I think the kind of the approach you guys have had is like the guys who transferred in have to earn it. But I remember watching the first couple of practices and I was like, man, I got to get him more involved. Got to get him more involved. And then the last practice y'all had, he was just taking the top off the defense. Was it something that maybe just clicked to him, getting back in football shape, getting in the started camp, but I think it was last Thursday was the first, or two Thursdays ago, was the first time I think I really saw like his full potential out on the football field.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where, you know, just as practice is going, as he getting comfortable with, you know, how we running things here at the University of Florida, I think those things going to naturally happen for him and continue to happen. You know, Eric's somebody that played in his offense. You know, he played 2 years in his offense at Georgia Tech. So it's just more, you know, getting his feet back underneath him, you know, and playing actual real football. You know, it's just been a lot of training and, you know, winter workouts and everything. So I think once, you know, just not Eric, but all the guys, once they continue to get their feet up on them, you'll see more and good things happening for them.
When did you know coaching was the path that you were gonna go down?
Yeah, probably in 2017. It was the year after I was done playing, and I found myself at a college game every weekend, you know, and, you know, it was like that realization of, you know, being a part of something bigger than you and giving back to, you know, people that you think you could help. And so I had that realization just throughout the whole season when I was traveling to different college games, my wife and I, you know, just getting that college experience outside of being a player. And, I just knew I wanted to be a part of football. At that time, I still ain't know that it was going to be actually coaching. I just wanted to be a part of college football, you know. And then, like I said, one thing led into another. I was actually working in recruiting in 2019 when Coach Dillingham was the offensive coordinator. And he the one who kind of got me back on the field once I took that job at Florida State. So, you know, it's been a quick journey for me. But that's kind of when things really accelerated after I went down to FSU.
Because you went where? FSU, then Georgia Southern?
I went FSU, Hawaii, and then Georgia Southern.
Hawaii.
Yep.
Was it cool coaching out in Hawaii?
Man, it was an experience I remember for the rest of my life, man. If I knew I was only going to be out there for 9 months, you know, that time go by quick. You never know. And but we had my wife and I had an opportunity to come back closer to family.
Yeah.
And so it was easy to take the job at Georgia Southern.
Yeah. You don't realize how far Hawaii is until
until you're there
at 7 a.m. to watch the NFL games. And you're like,
yeah, no doubt.
Damn. Oh, man. So what in your first year, what are expectations for the room, for yourself? Like what can you do and look back a year from now and be like, man, we had a successful year last year?
Man, just be consistent. Be where you're supposed to be. Do what you're supposed to do. You know, be aligned, be assigned, and you know, and play with your fundamentals. And once you do those things, man, good things always happen. You know, and so, man, the biggest thing for me is just the guys playing hard, playing Florida brand of football, and being consistent in everything that we do. you know, and just keeping it that simple, because then that's when big things start to happen when you're putting yourself in the right positions. Because just like we said earlier, it is a talented room. So what it's going to take for us to be a great room is being good consistently. So just doing the little things over and over, which actually lead to bigger things.
What does a receiver, you know, attack look like? Just the whole offense, a receiver offense look like in Faulkner's offense?
Yeah, the main thing is just playing fast and playing physical. And I know that could sound cliche, but when you do it, that's when things start to roll, you know. And that starts with, you know, blocking on the perimeter. I know receivers don't like to hear that, but that show you who you are. You know, that show you how you approach the game. And then, you know, just being able to make the routine plays, because you're going to have opportunities where you open, make the routine plays, and be consistent.
How many guys you think you'll end up rotating in that room, you know, in and out of, throughout
the
game?
And I couldn't even answer, to be honest with you, I couldn't even answer that right now. You know, everybody in a position right now where they're competing, they bought into it, and that's all I can ask from them is just continue to compete, and good things going to happen for the ones that it's supposed to happen for.
What's practice? I know Nick's been in practice a bunch. What's practice like? I know Summerall's a loud guy. He's there. He's very different than Billy Napier, who was here the last couple of years. What's practice like, and how does that compare to other experiences that you've had?
I told him. I said Summerall runs down on punt. When y'all do punt cover, he's in the drill.
I tell you what, man, it's an intense deal, and in a good way. The guys are bought into it. You can tell the guys are having fun. They getting coached every single second of the day. It ain't a moment in practice where somebody ain't coaching you, you know. And I think that creates a learning environment. That creates an environment where guys want to get better because they feel themselves getting better. They feel the coaching points working for them. And it's direct feedback. It's instant feedback. And they feel themselves getting better before they leave the practice field. And that creates the hunger and the intensity. So now when you come to a meeting room and you can see yourself actually getting corrected on what you got corrected on the field, that creates more buy-in, you know. And so, I think it's good. It's contagious. And, you know, guys want to be coached.
What DB is giving your receivers the most fits out there?
Man, you know what? I would hate to just highlight one of them, man. I think all those guys out there doing a solid job. You know, I like Flowers. He's super competitive, you know. But, I ain't trying to single anybody out. I think all those guys competing and iron sharpening iron right now for sure.
Okay. You mentioned Flowers, though. I'll take it.
A couple of the guys I wanted to ask about. Bailey Stockton comes over from Georgia Tech. And then two freshmen, one freshman, Justin Williams, kid right here from Gainesville. I think those are probably two inside guys. What have you seen from them? One being an older guy who's got some experience in the offense, and then one kind of getting up to speed at the college game.
Yeah, Bailey, again, he's somebody that's been in his offense, so he bring that valuable experience just because of that. And then the dude's super competitive, so that's gonna naturally make people better. And then Justin, he's just a young sponge. You could tell he's just soaking it all in. He got a bunch of older guys to be able to learn from, and he's willing, he's coachable. You could tell he was brought up the right way. He take coaching, he want to be coached, works hard in the weight room, and so it's gonna be some good things with him as he continue to progress and learn and grow as a player.
I'm going to put you on the spot. Who is the fastest in your room? Is it Lloyd? You know what?
I want to see him race before I say that. I ain't going to give it to nobody. I got to see him race and see him
earn
it. Wise.
You got to earn it.
Somebody fast.
You got to earn it. I can't just say who's faster. I got to see it.
Jalen Lloyd was committed to Mouse, was committed to Mike Holloway in high school to run track.
Yep.
And chose football instead. Like, he's got real deal speed.
Yeah. Yeah, now we got some guys that can roll for sure.
What else? What else you guys got?
How's Khalil Jackson coming along? I know he's coming off an injury, you know, older guy in the room. Is he making any progress? How he's been so far?
Yeah, man. You know, again, like when I talk about the intangibles, man, he got the right intangibles, made up of the right stuff. Coming to work every day, continuing to grow and get better. And I'm glad that he's in this room for sure. He got a good presence about him.
You guys were the same recruiting class.
Nah. Oh, man.
You're a year older, Nick.
Okay, just a year. What are you guys looking? It's interesting the way that the school calendar falls, where you guys kind of get five practices in, kind of lay some groundwork, and then the guys leave. I'm sure it's not the way that I handled spring break, which was tequila. I'm sure there were some iPads brought with them. What are you guys looking for tomorrow when you get on the field after the team's been away for a week, and how quickly will you know who took spring break seriously or who took it as spring break?
Oh yeah, you're gonna know it quick, you know. But the thing is, man, I shout out to the receiver room. I think those guys approach it the right way. You know, obviously we've been off for spring break and everything, but man, I'm looking forward to see how they respond. That's what we've been preaching to them, making sure we respond, making sure we be pros, even though we got a week off, man, make sure we handling our business over that time. And so with the guys and what I know from them so far, man, they've been pretty locked in. So I wouldn't be surprised if they came out and had a good day tomorrow just because of the makeup of those guys. And can't say enough about them in terms of that. And so I'm actually excited about tomorrow, man. You know, those days were starting to get a little too long without football, so I'm glad that we're back in action.
Yeah.
What do you do for spring break? Is your wife sick of you family in the house? She's like, get out of here.
Yeah, I was with family. I actually went back down to Palm Beach County, you Ooh. Know.
Gotta come down. It's beautiful down here, man.
Got to. Yeah, you got to. I got a chance to see my family, and then, you know, just got back up here and got my mind back in the swing of things just to get ready and just spent time with my wife and my two little girls.
That's the luxury of being closer and not in Auburn, bro. You can get on 95 and you're here.
Yeah, we good to go now. Yes, sir.
We'll have to take him out the next time we go out to Peanut Island, Corey. I got to arrange getting back down there. You're known as a very good recruiter, and I know that recruiting is all about relationships. But what in particular do you think helps maybe separate you from some other people that are in the business?
Man, you already said it, to be honest, man. And you know, people always say relationships, but like really living by that, you know. Mm-hmm. Like really building good relationships and getting to know people, you know. People don't know how much they don't care about how much you know until they know that you care about them. Mm-hmm. And man, like I said before, I was one of those kids that got recruited by Florida, Auburn, you know, these different big time schools. And, you know, just that understanding level, man, and being able to get a good feel for people, getting a good feel for what they believe in, getting a good feel for who they care about and, you know, what make them tick. And the one thing that I say, too, I don't have a certain pitch that I give guys, man. I just try to give them the authentic, real. And, you know, it don't matter who I'm talking to. If my realness and who I am ain't a fit for you, it ain't going to work anyway. So I ain't going to be anybody that I ain't, you know. And what I came to realize is that's exactly what these youngins looking for. And so that's what I do. I just be authentic with them. I don't sugarcoat nothing. If I see something, I say something. If I don't like how they respond to their parents, I'm going to tell them that. If I see something on film, I'm going to address that. And those, they like the positive reinforcement, man. And to be honest, I think some people shy away from it, but I'm not. And because that's the same thing they're going to get when they sit in the receiving room here. They're going to get truth. They're going to get constructive criticism. But I want them to know that it's coming from a good place, you know. And you do that throughout the recruiting process. That ain't something you do once they get on campus. And then also, man, everything that you do is a village. So it ain't just recruiting the individual. It ain't recruiting the kid. Like, you got to get to know the people that's around them, because you ain't going to be able to do it without the village once that kid get here either. You know, because they didn't raise the young man for 18 years. And so I don't got superpowers. I got relationship building skills. Mm-hmm. And that's what I use.
That's interesting too, because we we used to always talk about like the D recruitment process. When a kid would get on campus, you just had 30 coaches telling you that you're the best football player that's ever existed on the planet. And all of a sudden you get to campus and now it's, you're getting, you know, MF'd up and down the field and say, whoa, what happened? And you're canceling that, you know, I'm not going to sugarcoat anything to you just to get here.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of saves you some time on the back end, to be honest. When you take care of your business on the front end and really get to know exactly who you're dealing with, and they know exactly who they're dealing with, and now they're comfortable. And now when you're coaching them, it's second nature because they are already on point with what's your style and who you are.
When you're recruiting that family, what elements or what dynamics are you looking for? Because you were saying that you're not just recruiting the kid, recruiting the family, his support system, you know, and you get a little bit of understanding of where he come from. What are you looking for when you're recruiting the family?
Just who they are, what's their makeup, you know, just so you can have an understanding of who you're dealing with as well. And what I tend to find out is, man, all these families want is their young man to be around good people and people that's going to develop them not only on the field but off the field as well, you know. And so, that, you know, I just look for the basics, just like any relationship building skills, you know, whether it's a new friend, new coworker, you know, whether you're dating somebody, just those basic skills to learn a person so you could be most efficient on, you know, how you deal with them or handle them, because everybody different. And you just want to be authentic to the fullest, because, man, that's what, at the end of the day, that's what people looking for.
For sure.
What else? You guys got anything else?
Nah, man. Appreciate you pulling up for sure, man.
Yeah. Nah, I appreciate y'all, Tom. I'm glad I was able to do it, and appreciate y'all for having me.
Absolutely, brother. Well, we appreciate you. We'll keep in touch, man, and welcome to Gainesville. I know the Gator fan base is super excited to have you on board, man. We'll go enjoy the rest of spring practice, and we'll talk to you soon, brother.
Yes, sir. Y'all have a good one.
Awesome.
All right, thanks, guys.
Later.
Early, 8 a.m.
Yeah, Marcus Davis. Appreciate Marcus for joining the program today. He's got a good room. We're excited about what that room's going to look like going into next season. Let's do a quick ad break, and then we will continue to talk a little bit more about wide receivers if you guys want. One time for our friends over at Home Field Apparel. Go visit Home Field Apparel. Nick has showed you the corduroy hat. I saw a bunch of fans in town this weekend wearing Alumni Hall are wearing Home Field Apparel shirts that they have stocked over the years. So go visit homefieldapparel.com. Use promo code Stadium Miguel at checkout. We'll get you 15% off of your order and free shipping, I believe, as well. So homefieldapparel.com, promo code Stadium and Gale.
Boy, media trained, man.
Yeah, he is. I think they all are.
Yeah, very sharp.
I like it. I like that we get to talk to them. And I told John that on Friday, and he said they're professionals. They can talk about the program. I said, man,
I like that approach, because they are professional adults that got jobs at the University of Florida and should know how to speak to media.
Yeah,
and we're the Powder Puff Crew. We ain't got no hard balls. we just lobbing softballs, man. This is 30.
Yeah, I don't think we've had a tough interview since Matt Baker.
Shout out to Matt Baker.
When was that?
Year one of the show.
Ooh, what a show.
It's year one of the show.
Matt Baker made up, man. Shout out to Matt Baker, bro. He texted me.
Yeah, no, I like Matt. I've given Matt a few leads of things that I've seen here in Tampa. I'm like, hey, this just happened. Like, share it with your newsroom.
Yeah, something that's not Gator. If you got bad news and you want to spread fast, like, that's your man. Hit Matt Baker up.
Let's talk wide receiver room real quick. Who do you guys think leads the team in yards next season?
That's a good question.
Maybe who leads in receptions, yards, and touchdowns?
Yards. You want to start with yards?
Sure.
Give me Eric. I'll take Eric for yards.
Yeah. especially Aaron. If Aaron's throwing the ball, they have that connection. I mean, I think Tramiel too. I think Eric Singleton is exceptionally talented. I don't know if I totally know what Buster Faulkner's offense is going to look like next year. But I do think that that slot position does usually get more yards, and he's just a very good player. Hopefully he bounces back from kind of a down year there at Auburn.
I think this is a good – he's just a guy that's like, you know, usually a tight end is a good little outlet, but in this offense, definitely the slot. So being that release valve or that safety valve for both of these quarterbacks that aren't very experienced, and he's just – he can separate well. Like, he's a very good receiver. He's, of course, speedy, but also just after the catch – he can make people miss and do some things. So I just got him. I think he'll have the most yards. Maybe in the same line of like receptions too. You know, it's just favorite target type spot.
Yeah, I think it's – I think I want to – like it's hard to split up receptions and yards.
And yards.
Like, right. I think VB will have most receptions. And then it's hard to be like, all right, well, if you've got the most receptions, why don't you have the most yards? But I'll go 1, 2, 3 – VB for receptions, Singleton for yards, Dallas for touchdowns.
Sorry, say that one more time. Dallas for touchdowns, VB 3 for receptions.
And Singleton for yards. But I feel like I should – the guy who has the most receptions. VB's looked great. VB's looked awesome.
Yeah, man, I'm pumped to see Vernell Brown with another year in the weight room and just another year of – just opportunity for him. I think he is a fantastic player. Obviously a highly recruited kid out of high school, did very well in high school. We saw flashes of it last year. Didn't get a touchdown, but I think this is a year that he really puts his name on the map for his junior year.
I go touchdowns. I gotta see my man Dallas Wilson healthy, you know, a full season. Until then, he's boot man. So until the boot's off for a significant amount of time, he's boot man.
Oh, and I thought about why he's wearing pads with the boot. He's got a certain number of days that he has to wear pads before he can start hitting.
Well, he's never going to hit. Is he hitting?
No, he means just like contact, like the NCAA. Yeah, yeah. The NCAA is 2 days.
Yeah,
until no pads,
you can be hit.
Two days shoulder pads, and then before you can go into.
He's
full
not
pads,
about so. To do nothing out there. He's running around getting touched and stuff.
Well, I mean, you're if he's on the outside and there's a run play, you're blocking.
Yeah.
Nah, man. I think he just rides the bicycle with the boot on the sideline.
No. Dan's saying if he is able to play in the spring, he has now fulfilled the requirement of the NCAA. He has been at practice in shoulder pads. So if the first day he's back is full pads, he can be full pads.
Yeah.
And Dan's saying they were just checking off the box.
That's my – I don't know. I didn't Dan's ask theory. Anybody. That's just my theory is why he was fully padded up wearing the boot the other day.
My theory is if he even flirting with a boot, like don't even think about putting him in no – physical situations. But yeah, I'm gonna go with just Mays until I see Dallas fully healthy, you know, for a full season. I think just the bigger receiver is gonna be more your touchdown target, especially in the red zone. And those are our two bigger guys, is Dallas and Micah Mays. So if Dallas isn't, you know, his health isn't up to par, I think Micah is gonna get more snaps and more targets in the red zone than any of the other guys. So I'll just go Micah just to go against the grain.
Yeah. Let's run through the room real quick. Vernell Brown, the third sophomore. Eric Singleton, wide receiver, senior transfer from Georgia Tech and Auburn. Bailey Stockton, redshirt junior, transfer from Georgia Tech. TJ Abrams, who is a redshirt sophomore. Micah Mays, redshirt junior, transfer from Wake Forest. Dallas Wilson, Davian Gross, freshman. Jalen Lloyd, redshirt junior, transferred from Nebraska and Oklahoma State. Khalil Jackson, Jaden Edgecombe, I think, is a walk-on. Ace Ciangoli is also a walk-on, I believe, from Indiana. National champion. Justin Williams is a freshman. And Marquez Daniel is also a freshman.
I should ask him a question about Gross. I wonder how much, like, is this just a tough room for a young guy to go play in already, but I'm wondering, you know, since he just got a lot of running back experience, maybe some jet sweep stuff or maybe some wildcat. I know they've been flirting around a little wildcat. I wouldn't mind seeing him touch the ball in some type of capacity as a true freshman because he's an explosive guy, especially out of the wildcat.
Justin Williams is too. They're different, obviously, in size. I think Gross has got 3-4 inches. Yeah, 3 inches on Justin Williams. They weigh about the same. But just watching them, they did just look like they move different. I'd be curious to see if they try to do Gross or Williams in just ways to just try to get them the ball. With that room, you've got to imagine your starters right now are Vernell Brown, Dallas Wilson, and Eric Singleton. Mm-hmm. Do we agree that that's probably the top three right now?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then probably taking the place of Vernell and Dallas are going to be Micah Mays, Khalil Jackson. Probably. And then Stockton would probably take the Singleton spot. Is that what we'd say is probably a good top six?
Yeah, that's got to be your top six.
Yeah, Jalen Lloyd's in there.
How is Lloyd looking from your opinion?
He's I think he's like Aiden Mizell, but he's shorter than Mizell, but stockier. But like that's the kind of speed that he has.
He making plays out there though?
He's making some plays. Thursday was the day where they really kind of stretched the field. And I feel bad for the cornerbacks. Like there's so many receivers and you're getting all these reps and the cornerback room is just thin. So one cornerback might get 3 wide receiver reps in a drill. And when they're running vertical, trying to keep up with them, he's doing all right. I just
don't know what to expect out of him. You know what I mean? He had a good freshman year at Nebraska. Had a lot of yards and then didn't, let's see. He had 6 passes for 237 yards or 6 completions or 6 hard balls, sorry. For 237 yards, 3 touchdowns. He averaged almost 40 yards a catch.
I like that. I ain't going to lie to you. I like that a lot.
Your average catch begins with 4.
Yeah, I like that. I like all that, brother.
And each of his touchdowns was over 58 yards.
Yeah.
Like yeah. You insert him into the scheme. Like Faulkner's a schemer, so he's going to scheme some guys open or get them in favorable matchups. So, like, I like that average per catch number, you know. He's probably one of the faster guys in the room. So, yeah, he may push for some snaps as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's why I asked. Like, if we're talking, like, 60 yards, I don't know that anyone's – like, he's – rolling, burning. Coach did mention Davian Gross. They called him DG. But like you said, Corey, it's a tough for a freshman to jump in when you went in the portal and you got a senior, went in the portal, and got a redshirt junior, and a redshirt freshman. Like they got 4 guys with. Yeah, they went into the portal and got 5 guys.
They could play. Like, it's not like you got guys that are just projects still trying to figure out. You know, these guys that you could call on the tape and see their explosive in and out of routes, like, and they somewhat professional. They know how to handle camps, you know, spring camp, fall camps, all that come with just a little time for a high school kid to jump. You just got to be special to jump some guys in that room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or be unique of some sort. And I think he does have some uniqueness about him, you know.
Yeah, it's just I don't know that like what we're thinking of what you could get him in, what you get Justin Williams in, like, okay, I can have VB3 do that. Like, I don't need to take VB3 off the field to get you a jet sweep. I don't need to take, you know, a Jalen Lloyd who might be the fastest kid in the room. Hey, he can take that. Like, I know that Gross has a ton of athletic ability. He's in high school. Great with the ball in his hands. Same thing with Justin Williams. I just think there's other guys who are older and can perform at that exact same level. Like, it's just tough to – who are you taking off to get him Yeah. Two touches, three touches, I mean, four touches.
Probably injuries get him snaps his freshman year. Like that's gonna be a thing. And we don't want that to happen. But if we get down to the point where you got a true freshman of that caliber, I don't mind seeing him touch the field. But that's how he gets snaps, I think, year one, just players going down.
And like freshmen will earn playing time. Like on the defensive side of the ball, like KJ Ford, coaches keep telling me, like, we have to get him ready because he will play this year. Like, they're going to play freshmen if freshmen are ready. It's just that's
got to go on him if he watch.
Yeah, the receiver room is just – it looks weird in 14. We got to get him a new number.
Now let him ball out of 14. He might make it memorable, man. 15 went sexy until Tebow went crazy.
Jordan Castell wore 14.
We got to resurrect that number somehow.
That's right. Somebody's got to do it.
We can't leave it in his hands.
What? But listen, there's plenty of hits.
Inch on it. No.
Plenty of hits were left in the. I'm sorry. Plenty of hits were left in the 14 jersey. Hopefully, we can use some of them this year.
Yeah, just going back, Jalen Lloyd didn't play last year at all at Oklahoma State. Khalil Jackson out all of last year.
Was he hurt last year? Injury.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lloyd was.
Yeah.
Okay. It did. I say if he was riding the bench over there, then I take all my takes back.
Khalil Jackson, in his seventh year, was a guy that Billy Napier used a lot before his injury. Was always good for one circus catch a game. So, but again, him coming back, where does he fall in this grouping of wide receivers? And you know, was this a three wide receiver set? Is this four? You know, what are we going to see more of, right? And some of that's going to depend maybe a little bit on the tight end room. Yeah.
You know, oh no, we know we got a tight end room.
The tight end room
two tight ends out in the field. What if he breaks his first snap of the season? Hold on. What if he just breaks the first?
No. What if he brings out both quarterbacks again?
And we do 12 personnel.
I will tell you this. I've been at every minute of every practice. I haven't seen a single snap in 12 personnel. I believe the tight ends will be one at a time, single file.
Nice.
you're gonna block. And if the progression comes and nothing's open, be ready for that check down, buddy. Yeah. Turn and get your six.
Bunch of check down Charlies.
We gotta upgrade that room.
No, I don't think that's – I don't think that, like, that's – the goal for the tight end in this offense.
I'm looking at the list of tight ends, Nick.
The last offense, the goal of the tight end was just to block. And that made it hard to attract guys who wanted to catch touchdowns.
Yeah. I mean, they sure got thrown the ball a lot if they had it.
A lot of reps.
Block.
Having two extra tackles on the field and we still can't block it was crazy.
You were like, 18% of the players in the field were always tight ends. So, I mean, it's just opportunity.
And we still went, like, dominant in the run game. Now, I remember when we had Brent Peace and he would go 12 personnel. We did some damage running the ball in 12 personnel with Brent Peace. It was ugly formational-wise, and it wasn't, you know, Florida football, but we was gashing.
Yeah, but we also had Hunter Joyer. Shout out to my guy. That was what back a fullback. 40, what a 41. Fullback.
The last fullback in UF history. Yeah,
that's a retired position for sure. He is the last fullback.
I think so, because you had like Billy Latsko. Yeah, because anyway, Jackson Raymer, who works with Billy, I think.
Yeah, because then they went into like the H-back type of stuff, but I don't know if they've had like truly a fullback.
Yeah,
on the roster since Hunter Joyer.
What are fullbacks doing in life these days, man? 5'10" stocky guys is just built like all star. Like, what are they doing these days? There's no fullback construction. Construction.
Yeah.
General contractors, man.
Yeah, general contractors.
Pickleball?
Heavy equipment operator.
Yeah. Gym, you know, probably, CrossFit gyms. They're probably doing some of that. I don't know, but it's a lost art. There's still a couple teams that have a fullback. I mean, the Dolphins had Alex Ingold. There's still a couple in the NFL. Yeah, it'll come back.
Yeah, they all went back to linebacker, I guess.
Yeah, linebacker, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, because it was kind of a weird position where you're not tall enough to be a tight end.
Right.
You're not usually fast enough to be a running back.
Right. You just run into people real fast every play. Unless you might all-star. And he played a little running back too, though. Right?
I think. Thunder, that's the whole Thunder and Lightning.
Yeah. Shout out to Big Mike.
But yeah, I think going back to tight end room, I think it is what it is. It's going to take, like I've said it before, it's going to take a great portal class or a couple recruit high school recruiting classes to change that position. I think just me personally, I think Hezzy Kent has a potential future in the NFL on the offensive line. He's still in the
Yeah, man. I think we all you just kind of have to play the game a little while. And get his condition set up.
I don't know. I don't know if you could just switch to this offensive line so easily. I think you may want to do that early, and like now he's battling trying to lose weight and then having to put it back on. Defensive tackle may be more of an easier transition, I would think, than I would say offensive tackle, offensive guard. It's just a lot of technique involved with being good on the offensive line.
Like, I mean, I think about it now. You are saying, oh, why doesn't this guy that's probably never really played the position just go do this thing where those guys have probably been playing offensive line for the last 10 years of their life, right? And you're like, oh, just go do that instead. So,
well, you're not going to play
ask Phil if he has his eye on
and
him.
You're not going to play
Yeah, attack. Just have Phil take him out to lunch.
I think Buster and Phil take him out to lunch, and Buster goes like, hey, first off, it's on us. Eat up. Second off, here are
we're off the active
lineman eligible packages that we have where we can throw you the ball as an offensive tackle. And we'll do this twice a game, buddy. But let's go ahead and get you a
how
jersey.
How fast is he?
In the sevens.
Like, how fast
no,
is
he? No, he can move.
Yeah, no, I know. I can. Like, I've seen the videos of him.
He can move for his size.
Yeah.
He can't.
I don't know what type of caliber kids he was playing with in high school, but he was dusting them little kids a little bit.
He can move for his size.
I don't know what level of football it was, but he's but that's good level football.
Obviously, not Desmond Watson size, but that same reaction if you're like, dang, that's a big body not moving how I would expect something that big to move. But like, you're not putting him next to Amir Jackson and being like, oh yeah, they run the same.
Yeah, 313 pounds.
Moves exceptionally well for 313.
That's just like, we just can't keep being in school just putting extra large people and they're not looking. We just eventually, I don't want to, you know, Dez is my guy, but, you know, that's going to look a little crazy. But I do think, like, if he wants to play, like, you could kind of finesse him a little bit. And this is what I would do if I was a coach. Like, you put him at that tight end spot, make him block a lot, and just slip him out every now and then. You gradually just slide him into being a tackle. I think it's an easy way for him to start working on his blocking. So if we do go to a personnel, wouldn't mind seeing him on the field and start working on being a tackle in a real slight way. And because he got a block, you just send him over there with Phil a couple of practices. Hey, man, go today you're with Phil. You're going to be working on blocking. Tomorrow we'll bring you back with the tight ends. You know, I had coaches that finessed me like that.
We were looking at your film. Your footwork's a little bit off on your block, on your run blocking. So we need to send you over to the offensive line. They're going to work on that, and we'll get you back here tomorrow.
It's a boiling the frog approach, you know.
Well, it's like if you want to play tight end, you're going to lose 40 pounds.
What would Urban Meyer do?
A minimum 40.
Urban Meyer just throw him over there. Hey man, listen.
Different times. Hey, Urban used to say. Yeah.
Hey, Bill Hayes, I know I told you quarterback, though, but hey, you want to play right now or what, bro? It's receiver DB, bro. We got you.
Like, yeah, just, but like different times, though. Like, there was no portal. Urban would just throw a Greyhound bus ticket at you and be like, hey, you're going to play tight end, or here's a bus ticket, and you can go back home.
But it's also just, you know, being real with the player and telling them the quickest way for you to get on the field, make some money, and contribute, because most of these guys want to compete and just, you know, put helmet on Saturdays and sitting on that sidelines. They're not used to that. So you tell them, like, hey, bro, the quickest way for you to get, you know, active and playing and contributing to the team is to probably try to play this other position as well where we can use some help.
But that also, like, yes, I agree. But, like, he's not going to play offensive tackle in 2026, like, in the game, in the fall.
No. So let him play tight end as an extra offensive tackle. And you just slip him out every now and then. It's just a little finesse game. I'm not Buster Faulkner. This is just, you know.
You look different.
Yeah, don't try this at home, guys.
Oh, man. Let's run through a couple things. Antonio Riles is not going to make it today. We'll get him back on a different show. A couple of rule changes announced for college football for next year. Big one here, targeting carryover rule change. If a player is ejected for targeting for the first time that season, they can play in the next game, even if the foul happens in the second half. Second half targeting used to carry over and force the player to miss half of the next game. So there is no more carryover for targeting. You're still ejected from the game, but it will only be the duration of the rest of the clock there. They made a fair catch free kick. So we were reading what that meant, because this is the way, and I want you guys to know that if you ever have trouble falling asleep, go to the NCAA rule book. So the fair catch kick, under the rule approved Thursday, a team can choose to attempt a kick after a completed or awarded fair catch. The kick will be a field goal place kick with a holder, no tee, or a drop kick from the spot where the returner caught the ball. If the ensuing kick goes through the uprights, it will add 3 points to that team's total. The defense is required to be at least 10 years from the spot, or 10 yards, pardon
me, the
spot of that kick. Sorry, the next line down was talking about years. At least 10 yards from the spot of that kick. It's similar to the rule in the NFL and in high school football. So that could be, and we were talking about different ideas. If there's a punt where one team's punting from the back of their end zone and maybe they muff the punt and somebody fair catches it on the 35-yard line and there's 3 seconds left in the game, you can kick from there. So.
Huh?
I'm going to need an infographic.
Yeah, so, I need some show. I got to.
The team is in the back of their end zone punting the ball.
Mm-hmm.
The ball travels 30 yards in the air.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fair caught on the 30-yard line.
It's maybe tough to punt out of your end zone, Nick.
2 seconds left in the half.
We demand excellence.
Instead of putting your offense out there and trying to go for it, you can just do a place kick from there. I don't imagine this happening very often. It's a rule change, guys. That's what the rule is. How often we see it, just don't be surprised.
Gotcha. Thanks for running it by me, man. Did they run it by you before they made it a thing?
No. And reading it required me to read it 3 times before I totally understood even what they were doing.
I still don't understand it.
There was a rule change. Offensive pass interference is now 10 yards instead of 15.
I like that for my defense, but not for my offense.
Sorry, I'm reading another rule. There's unsportsmanlike. There's an oversight committee being created to approve official guidance around taunting and unsportsmanlike conduct. I've always said what the NCAA needs is more committees, so there's going to be one on that. And then on punts where jersey number exceptions, players who do not wear numbers 50 through 79 are used. The snapper and two adjacent linemen on either side who are lined up or touching the tackle box are now ineligible receivers by position and become the exceptions to the numbering rule when the snapper takes his position. So that's going to clarify the players that are eligible receivers in that formation.
Riveting.
I like the targeting rule change for sure. I thought that was just a little overdose, and you know, with the following game suspensions and all of that, just too much, man. Carrying over to the next year if it's the last game of the season, just a lot of shenanigans, bro. I'm glad they cleared that up.
It is just a 1 year trial, so that might happen. What you want to avoid, obviously, is people taking and making really dirty hits at the end of maybe a blowout loss. So we hope coaches and players can police themselves on this kind of action and activity. One rule was not approved, and that would have required players to wear long leg coverings from the top of their shoes to the bottom of their pants. And Tyreek Sapp's image was used on every article about that rule change. So, or lack of rule change, pardon.
The boys out there in Daisy Dukes, boy.
So growing up, we used to call them coochie cutters and not know what that meant.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But that was well before you knew.
Now, this is a family show. I'm surprised you just said that on here, man.
We're past the hour mark. Dan's hoping that both Sarah's parents and his parents have stopped listening to the show.
Well, man, they listen top to bottom.
That's a role, man.
Sarah's mom will often ask me questions.
I'm glad my in-laws didn't hear me than say Sarah coochie. Does.
It's ridiculous.
That's crazy. Your in-laws hear you say coochie's wild.
That what you just said.
They don't listen to the show. Mine though, at least I don't think so. They bought my son Florida State draws. I don't think they listen to the show.
That's a good point.
I threw them out.
The Gators hired a new women's basketball coach today. Yeah, I think we could probably. I don't think the line for that is as long as some of the others. So Gators hired Rhode Island's Tammy Reese as their next head coach. A lot of folks on the internet that follow college basketball were really high on her. She led Rhode Island to their first ever their first in 30 years. This year, she played at Virginia from 1989 to 1992, where she played with Dawn Staley. Her coaching career, she started while she was at San Diego State, then the associate head coach at Cal State Fullerton. Then she was on staff at Syracuse. She took over Rhode Island in 2019, went 138-73 as a head coach. She went to the WNIT twice and the NCAA tournament once. So,
yeah, graduated Virginia as their career leader in three-point shots.
Okay.
Also, I'm trying to find it. She was in a couple movies.
Air Bud?
His Space Jam.
She was in
Coach Carter.
Juana Man.
Coach Carter. Wow.
Juana Man. Okay.
Juana Man is that was my next joke. She was actually in Juana Man. She
played Vicky Sanchez in Juana Man.
Okay.
She was in an episode of Sister Sister.
Oh, I love Sister Sister.
And she was in, I think this is a Disney movie called Double Teamed as the volleyball coach.
I hope it's a Disney movie, not something else.
It's a Disney movie.
Okay. She played.
Has one of the worst, Double Teamed has one of the worst, I just saw it recently on the timeline, one of the worst as a like accurate to sports, true to sports, one of the worst endings.
Double team
ever seen. Yeah. Watch it.
I thought she was on Above the Rim.
Yeah. Just be careful on your searches if you're looking for the movie Double Teamed. let's see. So she went to University of Virginia. She returned back to Virginia as an assistant coach. She was frustrated that there was no women's college basketball. That's what Wikipedia says. Then when the WNBA was formed 2 years later, she was drafted fifth overall by the Utah Stars. And Stars with two Z's. Sorry. She played 50 WNBA.
I was
going to
say a stud,
games.
But that may be crazy. In basketball, women's basketball. So I said star. Anywho.
Sister, Juana Mann, and Double Teamed. She also appeared in Love and Basketball.
She might get a Hollywood star here in a minute.
Yeah,
it's a lot of acting roles, brother.
Mm-hmm.
She's an extra in some of these. Like she plays significant roles.
She went into like acting for a little bit. So like Vicky Sanchez was a role. The volleyball coach is like the
How old is
Disney movie Double Teamed was about a basketball team, but she was a high school basketball team, but she was the volleyball coach at the high school.
We got to get her on and we'll talk about it. I'll shoot her an email.
After she a lot, bro. Practice. Got a whole acting career and now she's the head coach at Florida.
Heck of a timeline.
She's from New York. New York.
Yeah, Dawn Staley said some really nice things about her in the PR write-up that you can go check out. But just great. She took over. They were 24 years removed from their last 20-win campaign. They had just won winning season over 15 years and had posted just double-digit victories in two of the previous 10 years before she took over. Took over during the COVID year, and then after that, they had their second highest winning percentage and first winning season during that time. Her second year included 11 conference wins, most for a team since 95-96. And then in 21-22, they set the program mark for wins in a year and then just continued to get better this past year, 28-5, winning their first ever A-10 tournament championship. So they even beat NC State and Providence this season.
Women's basketball is big business right now, bro. Get that women's team on, like, you know, on point. Love to see.
Yeah, I just think that there should be a situation where the Gators are at least consistently making the running to make the tournament.
Yeah.
Maybe not every year. I know that Florida's just never really had a ton of success in women's basketball, but with the talent here, and just the name and brand recognition and Jordan and everything else, you would, I know you just want some better results. So, you know, we'll see. And congratulations to her. Great opportunity for her. I think that the word on the street was they gave her a pretty good NIL budget to work with going into next year. And, you know, Florida has some good players on their roster. Liv McGill, I know, is a fantastic player. So now you got to keep them from entering the transfer portal and hopefully have some better success in the years to come. So congratulations to her. Baseball, rough weekend for them.
Ooh, boy.
Yeah. Kevin O'Sullivan had a great there's a great picture of Kevin O'Sullivan that will definitely be meme material.
For sure. And the boy looked like he had a rough week.
Yeah, he looked rough, man. Gymnastics won the SEC, and they are ranked third in the upcoming gymnastics national championship run. They're heading to Tempe, Arizona for the regional gymnastic championship there, and that's going to begin on April the 2nd.
Hmm.
Softball wins 2 out of 3 over number 1 Tennessee. So congratulations to them. Number 20 Gators men's tennis shuts out Tennessee in a 4-0 victory there. And the Florida women's dive team came in 10th at the NCAA championship. So congratulations to them and all associated.
Is the baseball program getting stale? That's a question in the chat.
I mean, it was on fire in the fall. Oh. The head coach leave, the assistant coach left, compound fracture. They were
it's on like fire. We peaked at some point. Now, are we on the other side of that peak, or is
I don't know. It's the last 2 years. I mean, the last 2 years they didn't host a regional, which is the first time they hadn't hosted a regional since 2013. But one of those 2 years, you go to Omaha. People keep saying it like it's a lack of leadership. I went back and forth with your boy Braxton, who didn't know the rules of baseball and wanted the catchers to go out there 20 times a game. But like they're like leadership. And I'm like, you don't have to reach for like fake things. They're like 170th in the country in fielding percentage. They play terrible defense. The bullpen.
Well, y'all always make Braxton my boy when he say something crazy.
He's your boy. I went back and forth with him too much. Like he was like, it's crazy that you don't think there's a leadership issue. I'm like, among the players had to coach themselves in the fall. The head coach and the assistant coach were gone. Like the players were running the program in the fall. Mm-hmm. The Liam Peterson addressed the entire team Saturday. So like people are just making stuff up. I think there's just like a void of. So I'm not really covering baseball like I have been. Jacob Rudner left. There's just like a
that's void. The fall off right there.
Yeah,
there's just a void, and people aren't getting smart baseball analysis, and they're just making stuff up. I'm like, bro, they're not hitting. They can't field the ball, and you're not getting consistent starts. And the bullpen walked 21 guys and gave up 28 runs. Like, what do you? Don't I think make it's stuff about, up. There's real tangible things to point to, and you're deciding to make stuff up.
Yeah.
What do I know?
Nick, I think you know a lot about baseball. What and I appreciate know, you.
They've got a brutal week. Tomorrow.
Florida State tomorrow, right?
They get Florida State, and then they have to go to Baum Walker.
Where is that?
Arkansas.
Oh, Arkansas.
Arkansas. Arkansas is weird. Sometimes they hit, sometimes they don't, but they always pitch well. And they get like 10,000 people a game.
Oh, wow. So,
I think 2-2 this week would be a very good week.
Okay. Mm. Where did the Gators drop to in the standings this week?
Out.
The okay, they did. Yeah.
Out.
Yeah, they got.
Yeah,
they
Alabama's
smoked.
Like the SEC is good. The SEC is the most competitive, best conference in baseball. Alabama's not one of the better teams in the SEC. They had just gotten swept the weekend before. That's a series. Looking at it, that's a series. I would have written down, "Hey, Florida wins the series. They win 2 out of 1." And you get no hit Friday. Like, what are we doing? It's the first ever 9-inning no hitter against the Floridas in the baseball program.
That's why you look like that.
Oh wow!
There was one other no hitter. It was a 7-inning no hitter from your favorite place in the world, pitcher in Jacksonville from JU, no hit Florida.
Oh wow!
Back in the '60s, I think, or the '70s.
Man, well, you start breaking historic records around here.
You get no hit Friday, and then you get an uncharacteristic start from Aiden King. He gives up 4 earned. He hadn't given up an earned run in his first 5 starts. Gives up 4 earned. And you come out hot on Sunday. You look good Sunday. You get a lead early. You're up 4-0, I think. Alabama's walking you around the park. I mean, Alabama had thrown like 36 pitches in the first inning. They'd given up a bunch of runs, walked a bunch of guys. They changed pitchers, and then you have a kid swing at the first pitch. I'm like, what are you doing? They haven't thrown a strike in 45 minutes. What are you swinging at? So that's on coaching. Like, if a kid does that, like, hey, that enjoy this at bat. You're out. This will be your last at bat of the afternoon. Like, that's on coaching. Yeah. So, like, some of it comes on coaching. Some of it comes on the players. The coaches can't play. But, like, how have we not drilled it into our guy? Like, hey, or as he's walking to the plate, hey, hand me your bat. I'll give it back to you after he throws strike one.
I'm a Sully supporter, right? I rock with him. I've never been fire Sully or no none of those vibes. But is he past? Is, you know, could he be burnt out a little bit?
Is he washed, as Rob said?
I don't know that he's washed. He had a lot going on.
Yeah.
In the fall. Came back energized, and then watching your bullpen just hand out tickets to the walkathon is draining, but it's been that way for 3, going on 4 years now.
I mean, as a Coral Springs High guy, it pains me to say, and it's not representing the brand very well in the pitching department right now.
The tenets of Kevin O'Sullivan's program have been elite pitching and elite defense. I've covered 2 or 3 teams that have had the best fielding percentage in the country. For Florida to be outside of the top 20, 25 is unheard of. They're outside of the top 150. This is through however many games they've played, through 20-something games, this is the worst defensive Florida baseball team I've ever seen. Wow. It's comical the way that they're playing defense at this point. And, like, you're not going to win games in the SEC if you're giving guys extra outs. And you're giving them extra outs through walks. You're giving them extra outs through errors. I think in Alabama's – I forget which one of the games. They all melded together while I was doing basketball. But I think it was Saturday. Every Alabama player that was walked scored.
Mm.
So
that's like, bad.
Sully can't throw strikes for them. David Kopp can't throw strikes for them.
Yeah, and Billy couldn't throw the touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean they've even had the catcher last year that they literally were like, hey, it doesn't matter if the pitch is called inside or pitch is called outside, just your glove's in the middle of the plate. Like, you're giving them a middle target, or you're just trying to simplify it. You're still walking. I mean, yeah, it's not the. The pitching staff and the way they've thrown is not what I've been used to covering Florida since 2013.
I think it's like it eventually becomes like it's the noise and, you know, the stuff around. So is it worth? Is the juice worth the squeeze eventually? Like, I'm not, you know, calling for anybody to be fired or anything like that, but I just think that eventually becomes a thing. Like, when a team starts breaking historical things that hadn't happened since 1960, you start getting into like Billy territory. And then, like, the off-field and the, you know, off-season distractions, is it worth it? You know, the performance we're putting on the baseball field.
Yeah, I mean, he is historically one of the best coaches in college baseball.
History, yes.
In college baseball history. He will be, in our lifetime, the best baseball coach Florida has. In terms of, I mean, he's already set the wins record. He has the only national championship. Florida looked good against South Carolina, but then you look at like how bad South Carolina is. They just fired Palmieri 5 games into the SEC slate. Like, South Carolina,
I mean, but they've just been getting smoked. Actually, South Carolina's been getting smoked in every sport but women's basketball.
South Carolina might, well, you. Ray Tanner is a Hall of Fame baseball coach, and they just made him the AD. And I think since he's been the AD, every sport except women's basketball has been bad.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because he's a baseball coach and will be hiring his fourth baseball coach since he moved up to AD.
Which is crazy because you would think on paper Paul Marinari – would have been like,
no, the game passed Paul by. Yeah, they Paul doesn't care about analytics, and like, I don't love analytics, but like, you have to use them. Yeah. I don't love analytics, I think people just like point to them too much. Like, as a baseball guy, I can tell you if a pitcher is good, like, I don't need to know what his spin rate is, I can tell you if he's good or he's not. In terms of coaching, like, yes, hey, like, we need to make this pitch more efficient, let's work on tweaking some stuff, and like, Paul's just not. Sully was like that. And then he's changed.
A field guy. Yeah.
Just an old school guy. Yeah. I didn't like that hire.
This Paul is what, Sully's 18th season at UF?
No, I think 19 or 20.
My 20? God. Yeah, it's time to.
Well, he was hired relatively young when he was from Clemson.
Yeah, he's 57. His first year was 08.
Yeah. So this would be season, what, 19?
Yeah, so yeah, this is 19. Well, I mean, yeah, 19 in a COVID.
All right. All right, gentlemen. One final time for our friends over at Alumni Hall. Go visit alumnihall.com. Let them know we sent you. You can go visit them on Archer Road or on Archer Road in Gainesville. Or you can go visit them at alumnihall.com. Thanks, Marcus Davis, for joining. 2-5 will be back next week. We got Malik Davis. We've got Scott Strickland. We've got John Summerall. We've got more coaches. We got a pretty packed schedule over the next couple weeks and couple of months. So we appreciate everybody for watching and listening. If you guys could hit the like button, the share button, the subscribe button, all of that, we appreciate everybody in the chat today. For your comments. But again, thanks so much to Marcus Davis. Boys, it's great seeing you.
Likewise, man.
See you guys next weekend or next week.
Same corner, same time, brother.
See you guys.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
I found nirvana! I win!
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $365 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only. Recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, winning isn't everything. Dale's a loser. I play to win. Like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.